This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting them, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so with say meditation as a system, the vast majority of us, it depends on people's development as well. They come to meditation for specific reasons, and the most obvious ones is to get some peace, to get some emotional balance of mind, the ability to withstand stress and difficulties in life, and you know, so like the ability to have the kind of emotional stability that can handle the ups and downs of life. And naturally, you know, there'll be people who are interested in developing insight and understanding of one's own mind and the world around us, because especially as human beings, you know, half the population are not just content with going to work and coming home and watching telly and maybe football on the weekends and just all the kind of stuff that mainstream, what's available in, say, mainstream society. Some people, you know, they might be looking for something a little bit more deeper and meaningful. So they'll be looking at, say, like insight practice, you know, developing a deeper understanding of one's life and the nature of the human being in general society. So with the development of the meditation, some people can be, say, like raw beginners on the path. That may be the first, possibly even the first life they come to meditation practice. Some people could easily have two or three, and they have, you know, they right from the beginning, even within the first 12 months, they've already got quite a strong basis with the practice. And people, you have the monks and nuns, you have the lay teaching fraternity, and the general. You have the lay, you know. is a slightly the solid lay teaching fraternity, many of the teachers that you guys know well, both in Australia, United States, other parts of the world, and you have the general lay fraternity. Every single one of us, we all have different parami. We've been on the path. Maybe the first life could be three or four lifetimes. So people's development, it all comes down to the amount of effort you put in and for how long. So some people, they can move, they can develop quite quickly right at the beginning. Some people, we had a situation years ago when we had lay disciples doing very well with the meditation practice, and one of the monks got a bit jealous, but the thing is, you've got a situation where people are very different, and you're looking at the amount of effort people have put in over years and years and years, maybe even several lifetimes. So when we look at the effect of the mind, so wherever people are at, the vast majority of people, it's a meditation practice, it's a skill. So even though the practice itself is quite reasonably simplistic, your mind is quite complicated. The underlying, especially the feelings, the thoughts, the views, opinions, one's preferences, likes and dislikes, increase the complication in the personality, and this is what you're going to have to deal with. So as you go, in to the personality, into your self-identity, into one's ego, you're going to see lots and lots and lots of stuff. Over many, many, many years, 20, 30, 30, 40, 50 years, so without end. Some people, if you get incredible samadhi, if you get incredible, say incredible peacefulness of mind, even the samadhi nimitta, people can band different words around samadhi nimitta, upachara, say full samadhi with the jhanas, this, that, but even the samadhi nimitta, even if you had a samadhi nimitta for 60 seconds, it would impress you. It's quite a very, very solid, deep, joyful, blissful state from that person's experience. And that would be very similar from one person to the next, because you're looking at the realm of the mind. You're touching on the realm of the mind. So that principle is a very, very, it's a key one in the long term, that you really need to understand yourself. So, the monks and the nuns, they just go up and down with their emotional states, their moods, views, opinions, attitudes, all the rest of it, a million and one things over years and years and years and years. But the bottom line is that you've got to know how to work with one's personality, one's character. And if you have, it's all very nice when things are going well and you're happy and peaceful and you're getting along and this and that. But you've got, you can't be careless in the sense that when things are good and you're high and you're on a roll and life's great, you've got to investigate that thoroughly, because it's not a sure thing. And when you're not particularly thrilled with one's personal life, or there's troubles, difficulties, there can be conflict between you and other people, it can be all sorts of things going on. So you have to give it equal attention, whether it's aversion or whether it's joy and bliss. You have to contemplate them equally, and the center point. So the Buddha was talking about whatever extreme you're looking at, you have to move back towards the center point of balance, the middle part, because every single feeling, every single thought or idea is the raw material for your insight practice. And you really can't neglect, even you might think, these things are so trivial, this mood just keeps coming up again and again and again, like 101 times. But the reason it does is because you still haven't completely understood exactly what's happening here. So with one's personal experiences, stuff keeps coming up again and again and again. You really have to focus on that, because it's unfinished business. You really haven't gone deep enough, you haven't understood it well enough, because it keeps persisting, it keeps coming back and back and back, multiple times. But so in a nutshell, without getting overly complicated, most of you guys have been practicing for quite some time. But in a nutshell, so you know, you're looking at your peacefulness side of the practice and your insight side of the practice, and you need to keep them both in balance. There's all sorts of little tricks and little methods that you can do to maximize the say the potential, the efficiency of one's practice. And because the bottom line is, if you're doing this for 5, 10, 20, 50 years, you know, you really don't want to waste too much time. You want to a situation where you're getting, even after 12 months, you should have if you're meditating every day, like at least a reasonable grasp, you know, if you're meditating every day for a full 12 months, and after 5 years, you should be reasonably grounded. It's not foolproof. I mean, this whole business is not foolproof, but you should know how to work with your stuff to a reasonable degree. But the key principle, whether the precepts, meditation, development of insight, the threefold training, eightfold path, you've got to have your insights there the vast majority of the time. Because that's the key principle. You know, the whole path, you know, is under the umbrella of insight and understanding. Because, you know, it's all very nice to get peaceful and tranquil and a sense of ease and contentment and whatnot. But it's that same thing again. It's not a sure thing. You know, you can easily, if you push people hard enough, if you want to see how good somebody's meditation is, You just push them, you just poke them, push them a bit, and then you'll see how their person. You don't have to do this kind of stuff. So the monks that unfortunately they do get into this kind of stuff, but you know that will be the test. If you're for example, if you're a manager, could be a police person, social worker, psychologist, a therapist, counselor. Your ability to deal with stuff, both internally, externally, will be reflected by the quality of one's practice. Okay, so something I want you guys to try. This is, you've heard me say this before, but the reason I put emphasis on this is it's very, very useful. Most of you guys don't lead completely hectic, full-on, you know, I mean, you're busy, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, you tend to, most of you probably avoid like horrendous lifestyles where there's just too much noise, too much business, too much activity, too much stuff going on. You know, you get a sense, you get an intuitive sense that, you know, that's not really the way, that's not what the Buddha recommended, that's not really the path to get caught up in just endless stuff. But this particular technique, I've mentioned this before, but it's quite useful, and it's actually... This was mentioned to me by Scotty, who used to connect with the group here in the past and is currently in the Philippines. Sent me a shot of his house. He's got quite a nice house. But this is a very, very easy. If you get somebody off the street, raw beginner, very, very easy to get a handle on this kind of practice. And the reason is because I call it the dark color meditation. You're focusing on, because we're in low light, close one's eyes, you just gaze into the darkness, you focus on the darkness, not in a forceful way, you know, you keep the muscles in the face quite relaxed, but you just gaze into the darkness, and because it's a very neutral object, it's very difficult to develop, to connect that darkness with thoughts and feelings and the physical body. And it's the easiest meditation in the world. It's much easier than, especially initially, than Anapanasati, walking, mantras, and it will get you peaceful faster than virtually anything else you can think of, and you can always use that as a bridge to Anapanasati if you wish. So Scotty was doing Anapanasati for 10 years. He couldn't get the results that he wanted, and he noticed one day that blackness was quite, you know, because you're meditating for 10 years, it hasn't gone to waste. It's not a waste of time at all. So you'd be putting in the effort, and then he noticed that black space was that black space was quite distinct in his conscious mind, and he thought, well, if I can't focus on the breath continually, maybe I can just focus on that darkness, that dark color, and his meditation really started to improve from that point. So we'll make a start. just get yourself in a comfortable position with your back straight, head upright. It's usually good to keep the hands in the lap and the legs crossed, or the legs, you know, say at least the feet touching. You know. People can choose which way they want to sit, but when you actually put your hands together and you cross your legs, you will feel the energy from the bodily energy tends to get centered, and you can feel the difference. The mental energy tends to become centered, because you're drawing the body like inwards with crossed limbs. And so you can see the classic meditation posture of the Buddha, and there's a reason for that. You just don't have your arms and legs all over the place. You can feel the quality of the focus, the samadhi. There's a difference. And just make sure there's nothing tight around the throat, around the waist, knees, and whatnot. And are we sitting for 30 minutes? 30? Okay. And then I won't overcomplicate this. We'll just keep it really, really simple. But you know, if you're not happy with this particular style, you can always switch to the breathing meditation in the way that you like. So just put it to the test. See what you think of it. And I'll talk you through it as we go along. So we'll just relax all the muscles in the face, and relax all the muscles around the eyes. And what we're doing is we're just gazing into the darkness, the dark color that you see in the mind. Thank you. So even if you have some thoughts in the mind, just try to mentally relax. Don't grab hold, don't push them away. Just allow them to be, allow them to settle. Make sure you keep breathing deeply enough so you don't fall asleep. make sure you keep breathing fully so you don't get too drowsy. So keep the muscles around the eyes relaxed and try to relax that mental, that dark mental space if you can, if you possibly can. So as the meditation continues, try to develop an attitude of detachment with this process. coming towards the end of the meditation, so just see if you can see any difference in the state of peacefulness in the mind. So from the, at the beginning and at the end, and if you see an increase in the background silence, then you know that you are making some progress. It's a bit neutral, a bit abstract, but it's quite useful, especially for beginners and for a bridge to the breath meditation if people struggle. So when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Anybody have any questions on the meditation at all? There's a couple of ways of looking at it. So you're looking at it like an absence of light. The main thing is it's not a normal state of consciousness, but it's not like overly abstract. So what you in a nutshell, what you're looking at is the black color, the darkness, black color, darkness, absence of light. Not everyone can get a handle on this immediately. For me, it's quite easy. But I've been going for some time, so it's a matter of adjusting one's way of looking to like get the results, to get the right kind of attitude. It's not the breathing meditation, because you've got a physical sensation. Some people it's easier to relate to, but because this dark color meditation, it's neutral, abstract. You've got this kind of darkness, emptiness. In the mind, you know, not to say that everyone has that kind of thing, but I've seen especially for new people, beginners, it's much easier to work with. But also, did you see any peacefulness at all? Any peacefulness, any silence at all? Because people are very different.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, it'll work.
Like
colors and lights.
Yeah,
especially with people in the world, it's just because it works for me doesn't mean it works for others. So, but for each individual, you have to see what meditation is best for you, and then you develop that as a skill. So for example, you could have an affinity for Tibetan Tibetan practices, or there could be certain things, even quite unusual, something quite different. Was it Ajahn Sumedho many, many years ago? He used this kind of what was the color perception? He used different colors like colored perceptions in the mind, colored colored discs that even the Buddha didn't really talk about, which weren't sort of like natural based colors, which was something of his own creation. But because he had very strong visualization, he could do that quite without difficulty. His memory. One person I know, memory is quite strong, visualization is quite strong. But there's other, especially for the beginners or anyone who struggles a little initially until they get a handle on a particular technique, there's all sorts of little tricks. Like an easy one is this one will get you, when it comes to mantras, because of the way, because of the perception, it induces tranquility faster than almost any other practice. And what it's based on is changeability. People have heard me talk about this, but I do this all the time. I do it several hours a day at least. I've been doing this for at least several years. So as you may be well aware, you have that principle, you know, all say phenomena in the universe is changeable.
Empty in nature.
So as the Buddha said, unsatisfactory on a, coming from an ultimate level, coming rebirth, continual rebirth, you know, for thousands of lifetime is an unsatisfactory process. So that's the word he used. But when you do this thing, this mantra, feelings are changeable, thoughts, perception, consciousness, moods, attitude, anything, you know, 1,001 different ideas. Is little mantra, that thing, whatever it is, it could be, say, fear, an easy way to relate to it, feelings are changeable, which everyone can relate to. And then, this is especially for beginners, even up to intermediate, if anyone struggles with meditation, you induce the tranquility using the power of both the peacefulness meditation and insight. So what you do is you choose the mantra which is important to you. It could be anything, it could be things like, history, could be like religion, doctrines, could be absolutely anything, could be flowers, trees, anything you can possibly think of, but it's got to be important to you. Little mantra, that thing is changeable. And then you do your big spaces between the words. So an example would be, say, you know, breathing out, say, like feelings, breathing in, breathing out, are changeable, so nice and spacious, relaxed. And then you do that for at least, say, especially for the beginners, for me I can do it after 60 seconds without any difficulty, but maybe 2 to 3 minutes for people who might be a little bit, their minds might maybe in their mind might be a little bit busy, and then you go straight to investigation. Samadhi can be a little bit tricky in the sense it can take hours and hours and hours and hours, dozens and dozens and dozens of hours. You may need to be on retreat doing 4 to 6 hours a day for several days, even before you start to see any peacefulness at all for some people. But it's a matter of skill. This is why I keep emphasizing this thing. So feelings are changeable, and then relaxed, spacious, big spaces between the words. And then you start, you do that for several minutes, and then you go straight to investigation, wisdom practice. So, and then whatever comes up in the mind, could be anything, could be thoughts about a friend, could be work, whatever it is. Why am I thinking about this? What does this mean? What is the connection with my friend? What is the business at work? You know, why am I thinking of my child? Maybe my child's education. Could be absolutely anything, 101 things. And then you by investigating these thoughts and feelings, and it doesn't matter what it is. It can be the most trivial things, like could be butterflies, could be, you know, bees in the garden or little sparrows and stuff like that. You know, the way they fly, the way they move, the way they behave. It's not trivial stuff, because when you investigate this, you're increasing your insight knowledge, but you're increasing the energy which induces samadhi, which induces tranquility. To be quite honest, in a sense, it's easier to develop skills with vipassana and investigation and insight and understanding than it is to develop samadhi. You know, some people, you've got to get them on a 7 to 10 day retreat doing 4 to 6 hours a day before they see any real peacefulness. But if you fast track the meditation, you keep switching between the peaceful the mantra meditation, using that changeability principle. This is the changeability principle goes right through the cosmos, the universe. No one can refute that. Mm-hmm. So you're actually keeping your mind in line with ultimate reality principles, and this is why it induces tranquility. You know, I can do things like like Buddha, I can do things like Sama Arahant, but as soon as I do the Nietzsche principle, it automatically induces the tranquility, because you know you've got your mind in line with what the Buddha taught you, in line with the reality of the universe. It can be anything. it can be like protons, neutrons, right up to chemical elements, right up to organisms. You know, the way moons and suns revolving in the solar system. It depends which depends which way you gravitate. The mind gravitates. Some people have got a fascination for chemistry, quantum physics, biology, the natural world, flowers, plants. You steer the mind in the direction which is important to you, and then you switch. If you want to see the meditation to take off in the shortest possible time, you don't want to spend years doing this stuff and not seeing results. You keep switching every couple of minutes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and you'll see the meditation develop easily 2 to 3 times the speed. Because the thing is with samatha meditation, it's quite fragile, and it can be easily disturbed, and it's not foolproof. But when you reinforce it with investigation, then it gets firm. You know, it doesn't fall apart very. You know, it doesn't fall apart as easily. The whole thing, like sitting meditation, getting peaceful. If you haven't already put the work in, either this life or past lives, it's not going to be a piece of cake. You know, the lives of the lay practitioners are a lot busier than the monks and nuns in the monastery. So you've got to give yourself an edge. You've got to increase your ability in this area. So little tricks like, if you've got a busy life, you're full on, you could be working in the mines 10, 12 hours a day, 14 days straight, come home, then you've got to look after one's house, the property, the lawns, banking, this and that. Your life is full on. You've got stuff rolling all the time. But you can do this, you can do that mantra 1,001 different ways. This is another technique. You do one mantra in the beginning every couple of minutes, every 2 to 3 minutes. And in that space, in that space between the mantra, then you investigate. So your personal experience, things which come up, things you go through, and then one of the advantages of this is it will sharpen you, and it will make your mind faster and sharper, because you're increasing the awareness of the senses. So you've got this little samadhi which you're doing 16, 18 hours a day, and for me I can see it within, if I do this kind of thing every 60 seconds, I can easily see it within 15, 20 minutes. It's quite clear. And you guys, whose lives are a lot more, you're much more busy, you've got more stuff rolling, easily within a day. If you're a practitioner, easily within a day. If you're a raw beginner, maybe 2 or 3 days. But it's there all the time, that background peacefulness. I'm not saying I can only talk from my own experience and from other people's experience, but easily within 2 or 3 days, and you get that background samadhi which is there all the time, 16, 18 hours a day. Not to say that your mind is really, really peaceful, but you know there's a difference. You can see it. It's there. And then you sharpen your wisdom, your insight, and you're investigating all different things. Anything. It can be anything. Little ants crawling on the ground. Could be perfume, could be absolutely anything. The taste of maybe a dish that you cooked that particular evening, certain herbs and spices, absolutely anything whatsoever. It's not rubbish, it's not a waste of time, because as soon as you keep applying the mind, you're investigating one's the natural world, the stuff around you, your internal world, you're increasing the energy for samadhi, and it makes it sharpens you. So if people do a lot of samatha meditation, it can make people a bit dull, it can make them slow, and it can reduce their intelligence until the samadhi wears off. It's not, for the vast majority of people, it definitely slows them down. So you counteract that by pushing the vipassana. If your samadhi's there, you never ever allow the vipassana to fall behind. It's got to be at the same level or slightly stronger. Because the bottom line with the path is you can have all the samadhi in the world. You can have jhanas 2 or 3 lifetimes straight. But if you don't investigate and you're not contemplating, especially the anicca dukkha anatta or the very, very solid practices that the Buddha recommended, you're not going to get enlightened at all. You know, you can do this for 50 years, 100 years. You can do jhanas for 50, 100 years. It's not going to get you enlightened. You know, it's only one side of the equation. You've got to, when it comes to the forest masters, you've got to have a minimum level of samadhi. You cannot break through to the path unless you've got at least a bhajana samadhi. You've got to have the five hindrances suspended as a minimum. The Buddha didn't talk about upachara samadhi. He talked about the jhanas all the time. You know, so I've had two forest masters say upachara samadhi is the absolute minimum, but the vipassana's got to be there at full strength, because the underlying defilements in the mind are so tricky, they're so delusive, and so captivating that that you need that just to get the clarity, the stillness, and the sharpness. You know, the mind's got to be sharp. It's got to be like a laser beam, not this kind of oh yeah, I'm peaceful and you know I'm reasonably focused. No, it's not like that at all. It's 100 times better than that. That's the kind of samadhi which is going to break you through, and that's what you've seen in upachara samadhi. You know, it's not of this world. It's the world of the mind. The way they explain it, it's the world of the mind. And you know, you won't see any take. Even these people who do, you know, the absolute best methamphetamine, the purest methamphetamine you can get, it's going to be at that level. You know, that when it comes to that incredible euphoria, it's going to be better than that, because it's at a high level on the level of the mind. But in essence, so when you're looking at your overall experience, you're looking at, you know, you're, with your faculties. Now you're looking at 37 enlightenment factors, but without getting overly complicated, you look at oneself and you think to yourself, am I really, you know, when I do these kind of practices, it will make you mindful. You do these little mantras once every couple of minutes, and you'll definitely see sharpness of the mindfulness, your ability to investigate the speed and the sharpness of the mind. You will see it easily over a couple of days. And because the bottom line is, if you're going to be doing this for 20, 30, 40 years, you really don't want to be playing around, like wasting too much time. You know, you've got, you know, anyone who thinks that they're who considers themselves to be a Buddhist practitioner, practicing Dharma, you know, within 12 months, meditation every single day for 12 months, you should have a reasonable idea what you're doing. You know, you shouldn't be completely lost, confused, full of doubt. Not to say that that can't happen. So it's like, you know, if people get stuck, they all have to do is ring the monks or nuns. They're more than happy to talk to you guys about practice. And then, you know, you can be living 100, you know, 100, 500 kilometers away from Perth, and all you have to do is pick up the phone. You get some very clear instruction, and then you just get, you know, you just keep going with the practice. But you know, so it's a matter of balancing. You know, you look at your nature, you look at your the qualities that you're developing. You know, I haven't got time to talk about, you know, bags and bags and bags of stuff which is involved in practice. But you know, everyone knows that, you know, like if I'm forgetful, or if I have a potential for anger, or if I have a, you know, you can see the strengths and weaknesses in one's personality, and then you think to yourself, well, what, you know, say for example, if I have trouble with say like anger, you know, anger, irritation, and everyone has something, everyone, so, but you know, you've got a responsibility to, even if you don't like looking at it, you've got a responsibility to investigate. And come to an understanding of that, because if you don't, it's not going to go away. It's going to stay with you. You know, it'll easily stay with you 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, because it's not being addressed. That, you know, that mental state of anger. If you really don't understand what you're going through, what the triggers are, the causes, connected with certain people, certain times, places, you know, it will just keep coming back. It keeps knocking at the door of the mind, like, you know, I'm coming back, you know, I'm back again. So you've got to address things. You really, even if that state comes up 1,000 times, which is, you know, the monastics say this, you know, it's a regular thing that monastics say, it comes up, you know, 1,000, you know, for the 1,000th and 1,000th time. The reason is because it's not fully understood. You haven't actually reached the deepest level of that particular mind state, and it's not resolved, it's not understood, and this is why it keeps persisting and it keeps returning, because the problem has not been fully understood. Is there any questions at all? Mm-hmm. Anything whatsoever? Did somebody even get any peace from that meditation at all, that dark colour meditation? Did you see any peace at all or not? It's a bit different for me because I've been doing this for quite a while, but did any of you guys see any peacefulness or not at all? All of you saw no peacefulness at all.
No peacefulness.
Yeah, you could see it. But you only got to do this for 7 days. You've only got to do it for 7 days and you will have a good handle on this. You know, I'm not saying this is the most incredible thing you'll ever see, but it's very, very useful. You know, you'll get better, you'll get faster results with this than you will with Anapanasana, with the breath meditation. But if you're keen on the breath meditation, you can use this to get a minimum level of stillness in order to bridge to the breath meditation.
Well, how would you remember to think of that mantra, like every minute? You said
Namo. No, it's natural. You'll get it down within 10 seconds. Even every couple of minutes, it will be intuitive. And if you do this for like a week, you only have to do it every couple. You don't do it every 60. Some people might be able to do it every 60 seconds, and they may be able to work at full speed. But you do this every minute of the day, 18 hours a day. It's definitely going to it's gonna slow you down without any doubt. I'm not saying that's exactly what will happen with everyone, but you have to test it. But to be safe, if you're an engineer or if you're a police person or you're the boss running a company, you've got to be careful with this stuff because you don't want your faculties impaired. You don't want any impairment in memory and especially like your brain speed, memory speed. Now you've got the half of you guys, you know, must be working for a living. There's a lot of financial pressure on people. You can't make mistakes at work. You've got to be careful. So, but if you're interested in Dhamma, you're as safe as a brick house. You do this every 2 or 3 minutes, but you do it 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it will sharpen you. It will make you faster and smarter because you're sharpening your faculties with this very, very light samadhi, and you investigate those mantras every 2 or 3 minutes. You investigate just very, very gently between those points.
So you don't do it while you're in your meditative state. You just do it all the time during
work. Yeah, all the time, all day, all night, outside of sleep.
Oh, okay.
But you know, it's very easy. Yeah, it's just a skill. I don't expect people to be able to do this because they get distracted with work, they've got children, they've got this and that and this and that. They've got 101 things, you know. So, but if you develop it as a skill, it's such a little thing. It's not much. It's nothing. Every 2 or 3 minutes, one little mantra. It's just a breeze. But it's a skill, a tool that you develop.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah? So you know, you give it a spin for 7 days, and you see how far it can take you, because the thing is that especially with Dhamma, you really many of you have been practicing for like a long time, probably 20, 30, 40 years, and with this kind of very, very light technique, you're constantly improving and developing, you know, from hour to hour to hour to hour, you know, every single day. So it doesn't matter if you're going to die within it, if you're the doctor tells you you're going to be dead within the next 3 months or 6 months. Now, I'm not joking about this. You're going to die in the next 3 to 6 months. You've got your normal practice, your normal sitting, maybe every day, chanting, maybe a bit of study, this and that. But when you've got this kind of light, very light practice rolling, it reinforces your main practice. So when you actually go to sit meditation, you can get peaceful much faster. Your ability to investigate and analyze and dissect and understand things is much better. So, because you've got this thing, you know, got this light practice rolling all the time, day and night. So it doesn't, you know, so even if things are incredibly serious, and, you know, you've only got 3 months to live, and it's, you know, the doctor said, the specialist, whatever, you don't have to worry because you've got this background practice rolling continually, and then you've got your main practice when you have time, like during the day or evening. But it reinforces it. You keep increasing the energy and the strength and the firmness with this kind of very, very light samadhi wisdom practice. Yeah, my brother's teacher, his last martial arts teacher, used to use a Zen practice like listening to sound. This is not everyone's cup of tea because some people don't like it. It makes them like a little bit too sensitive. It makes their hearing very, very sensitive. But one thing I noticed about him was he was like, it was different because he was doing the martial art practice every day, but he was abnormally sharp, like razor sharp, even driving his car in the suburbs. I mean, he had a good vehicle with good brakes and whatnot, but the focus and the sharpness and his mental speed, it was outside the normal range. But the things he'd already been practicing martial arts for at least 25-30 years, which, you know, every day, almost every day, which makes a big difference. But he was he had this almost like a mindfulness was abnormally sharp, you know, up there, you know people who've got very, very, very strong parami in this area, it was at that level. But he used to do this. He was looking at his wife was at work. He was looking after the children, at home, and but he would do it all the time. And even his black belt level students, even for example, he'd be in the dojo, teaching, and his oldest daughter. They were just youngsters. I think the little boy might have been about 2 or 3, and the older sister was about 4 or 5, and even his black belt level students, his sister would be beating up on his son, or, you know, maybe roughing him up or something, making him cry, and those guys didn't even pick it up. But he would hear the children in the house, at least out, you know, he got the dojo, the door, maybe the door was open possibly, and the house was at least 60 feet, 70 feet forward on the property, and none of the students would hear the children squabbling, but he could hear it, and he knew that the daughter was playing up and giving his son a little bit of a hard time. But it's like a skill. Is it, anything else you wanted to bring up? Any points? Anything whatsoever?
Good question. Does it make your, or that means that sort of practice, does it make your five senses sharp, or your mental power sharp?
It makes everything. That very light samadhi practice, that one mantra every couple of minutes, it makes your mind and your faculties sharper and faster. But you have to feel it out. This is only what I see in other people. But the thing is, it's the way it affects the mind, regardless of who that person is. You're still looking at mental training, you know, that you're looking at the principles still cut the ice. You're still applying the mind in a certain direction. And you can see the results. So as the Buddha talked about training the mind, no matter which way I explain it, that's exactly what you are doing. So, you know, you're going to see the benefits. You're moving in a certain direction, and then you see the benefits from that approach, that very, very light meditation approach. Okay, if you guys, is it time for you guys to finish up or have tea?
Okay,
thank you very much for your attention. Yeah, yeah, well, you got a chance to finish off? Which one?
The other side.
The other side?
Yeah. Sharing aspiration.
Okay. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, celestial beings, guiding spirits of earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile,
may all
the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana.
In every kind of earth,
may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor.
May the
forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all beings, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.